This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, White House hopefuls look to 2008. And did BET blunder? Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., economist and author Julianne Malveaux. She's president and CEO of Last Word Productions. In our Chicago bureau, Roland Martin, executive editor of the Chicago Defender, and George Curry joins us. He's editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. He's in Maryland today. All right, folks, a lot to talk about. We just heard from Senator Bill Frist a moment ago. Roland, let me go to you. People like nice round numbers. 1,000 days to go was the headline in a USA Today article talking about 20 who have possible presidential aspirations. When you look across the board, you see one woman in this grouping, and that, of course, is New York Senator Hillary Clinton. If you want to throw Condoleezza Rice on the Republican side, though that's a long shot, you can. But again, most of these 20 men, save Bill Richardson, really, the New Mexican New Mexico governor, are white, middle-aged men. Same picture. Same problem, many say?
Well, absolutely, man. And the people who run for president from the Democratic side, you know, they've elected the last two Democratic presidents were governors. And so that's really where they draw that pull from. And so when people who run for a higher office, they're going to either be governors, they're either going to be U.S. senators, and there's only one African-American in the U.S. Senate. There might be three come November, but you don't have any African-Americans in any governor's mansions. So it's not a surprise that you don't have lots of color, lots of diversity among those candidates.
Here's the interesting point, George Curry, one of the Republicans in this list, and albeit a list made by the media, this name has been bandied about. Some would have thought some years ago you would have never been able to raise this name, and that's former House Speaker Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, but I don't see him getting any traction. I think much more viable candidates, certainly on the Republican side, would be John McCain. He's a perennial candidate, and certainly the Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, who really seems to be a popular figure. So, yeah, you can throw a name out there, but I think that they, along with Frist, will be the leading candidates on the Republican side.
Julianne Malveaux, when you look at the Democratic side, many people still wondering outside of Hillary Clinton the pool to choose from. John Edwards, of course, is there, but John Kerry's name continues to be bantied about. Wesley Clark, who raised his national profile with the run. Joe Biden, another name talked about here. Democrats still feeling that they haven't found that lightning in a bottle candidate outside of Hillary Clinton, who suggests some suggest, too polarizing.
Hillary is very polarizing. I mean, I think that there's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think she can clearly win a primary, but the question is the election. And the more we talk about she can't win the election, the more you almost kind of make it so. But what white man in middle America is going to vote for Hillary Clinton kind of becomes a question. The Democrats haven't found a polarizing candidate because Democrats have not found a polarizing agenda, frankly, or a lightning rod agenda. The Democrats are dithering around. I mean, it's my party, but it's a pathetic party right now. And so, you know, out of that emerges a Hillary. I've also heard Barack Obama's name mentioned, although clearly it's probably a little early for him. But his name has surfaced as well.
More so for the second name on the ticket.
Absolutely. Well, although Edwards, I think, would have been compelling, he's really dropped out of the spotlight, heading a poverty center down in North Carolina, and you just don't see much of him. He's not traveling. He's not talking. He's really in the background.
Still has time to raise his visibility.
He is traveling. He's made like 49 trips, actually, and so he's particularly New Hampshire, those places he got to go. But he's not getting much coverage, but he is traveling.
Yeah, but one has to believe as we get a little closer, maybe 500 days away, we're still a long ways away, that some of these folks will certainly raise their visibility.
Well, very true. First of all, you have Virginia Governor Mark Warner, who also is making some noise as well. And as you said, Bill Richardson is certainly a very viable and a strong candidate. Again, this thing is going to shake out, and the people who even being mentioned right now, a lot of those folks are going to fall by the wayside. And the thing about Hillary Clinton, Senator Hillary Clinton, you know, Republicans clearly, you know, want to go after her. They're saying, you know, she would be bad for America. And I always say this here: if a person like Hillary Clinton is that bad, you would think the Republicans want her to run. In fact, they don't want her to run. That's the last thing they
want.
And
we should note it's ex-Governor Mark Warner. Many suggest that he stepped aside to make sure that he readies himself for this run.
Well, you know, the Hillary thing.
Real quick.
Okay.
Real quick. Go ahead, Julianne, real quick.
The Hillary thing that's interesting is that they have used her as a fundraiser, Roland. Hillary's yes. name shows up in RNC mailings regularly, so I think they do want her to run. I do think that they feel the polarizing aspect of her candidacy will bring more dollars and more votes to them.
All right, we'll see. Many days to come. We're hearing from Michael Brown, the former head of FEMA. Some say the disgraced former head of FEMA, yet you wouldn't know it by virtue that he's going around the country as a consultant and being paid big money to do so. He's saying that he may be willing to testify and blow the whistle, if you will, on the White House to really tell the real story about how early federal officials knew of proposed breaches to the levees in New Orleans and all that went on, now trying to distance himself to some degree in terms of taking all the blame. George Curry, any thought here of somebody tripping upwards?
Well, he's probably tripping, period. Let's put this in context. He's not volunteering to go and testify. In fact, he tried to hide on the executive privilege, and the White House counsel, Harry Myers, declined to give him a letter saying you can do this. So he's being forced to testify. So let's not paint him as some kind of a white knight or just plain any kind of knight going riding in saying I'm going to really tell the truth. And first of all, and then secondly, we got to find out whether he's even believable. He hasn't been that believable in the past.
Well, it is offensive that here's someone who we expected to tell the whole truth, the absolute truth, when he testified previously. And so is he basically admitting that, well, I really fudged, I really didn't reveal everything? That should be offensive, and I would hope the members of Congress would slap him around a little bit by saying, look, we had you in here before. Why didn't you tell the American people the full truth versus giving us a partial truth? And so, absolutely, he gets no credit in my book for saying, now I want to tell everything that I know.
You know, the reason why he didn't tell the whole truth before is he was too busy studying the fashion magazines, you know, and how you're supposed to roll your sleeves up to make sure you look like you're working. I'm just cracking up at the consulting fees that he's rolling in. This is the great Republican way, you know, screw up and basically screw over, you know, nearly a million people and get paid to now do disaster prevention in other places. Whatever he says, I think Congress will have to take with a grain of salt. I mean, this man literally has no credibility, and whatever he has to say about the White House, it's real clear that he was a placeholder who was better known for racing Arabian horses than taking care of business. And you know, whatever he has to say, it's just at best amusing and at worst appalling.
All right, let me go to my old stomping grounds, Black Entertainment Television, yet again mired in the midst of controversy. People criticizing the network for not taking live coverage of Coretta Scott King's funeral, while Television One, the Black Family Channel, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News Channel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, ran the funeral or portions thereof live. BET has released a press release here suggesting that they gave the experience for those who wanted to see it on their website. You could tune in live there. BET, we should note, has been criticized throughout the years, most recently in September, for lack of Hurricane Katrina coverage during the days immediately following the storm. Some suggested their retort there was that they provided a three-hour primetime slot in September for a telethon to raise $12 million for Hurricane Katrina victims. And this Sunday, they will air 3 hours of tributes and special moments, it says here in their press release, devoted to Mrs. King. Roland, it seems BET always comes in on the back end often. They will say that that's the way they operate, and they've chosen to do so. What's your thought?
Well, first and foremost, my commentary is run on TV One cable network, so I need to put that out there for obvious reasons. I think what BET is greatly guilty of is being absent from the historical record. And that is, if you're serving a 12-plus audience, how can you say, well, sure, you can go to BET.com. The fact of the matter is, BET can offer a different perspective to the coverage of Coretta Scott King's funeral. It's not just taking the live feed. When John H. Johnson died at the Chicago Defender, we put out two special sections. Our coverage clearly differed from that of the Tribune and the Sun-Times, and that's where BET dropped the ball. To so simply say you can go to the website to find it, to me, is ridiculous. This was a state funeral. This was, if you want to say a state funeral in terms of the highest form of a funeral in the black community, this was it. And so to be completely absent from that historically, frankly, is bad.
It really is a day late and a dollar short here. Right. I mean, it's very much a day late and a dollar short. And to say you're going to do something on Sunday, it was very disappointing as you saw some of the commentary on CNN. I saw a little bit of what was going on TV One as well as MSNBC. I was looking for some perspective. Quite frankly, that was missing. And BET is uniquely situated to do it. But BET started backing out of doing real news when they canceled their nightly newscast and decided that, you know, sort of 60-second inserts into regular programming would substitute for news. So it seems to me that they've decided a long time ago, as Bob Johnson used to very often say, BET stands for Black Entertainment Television, underline the entertainment.
All right, George, let me ask you this, George, before you take up on that point and pick up. You know that I've had, and I should note this, I've had private battles with Black Entertainment Television in terms of their programming. I have often felt that they haven't always serviced the community yet. I also understand that they can't be all things to all people. Julianne suggested that Bob has always said, hey, it's an entertainment channel first and foremost. So that being said, can they hold to that?
Well, let's go back and contrast. Look at the Million Man March. They provided all-day coverage. Ed, you anchored that. I mean, Bob Johnson closed down BET, the only black major company that I know of closed down, saying we're supporting the Million Man March. So that was still BET. It wasn't less entertainment then. And Julianne, why I would disagree with you, it didn't start with the nightly news. It started long before that, when they killed Lee Story, which I used to be a part of, when they killed Teen Summit, and when they killed BET Tonight. They killed all of that. And so even before, and with all the criticism BET received, it was providing more public affairs programming than the rest of the networks combined. Now they have basically abandoned that, and I think it's a shame.
Now, Roland Martin, some will suggest that this may be a sign of the fact that Viacom, in fact, now owns BET, but some of what George talked about happened prior to the sale to Viacom.
Absolutely. I won't simply place this at the feet because Viacom now owns them. This was a BET decision, and it follows along the lines of what they did when Bob Johnson was owning himself and Viacom was not in the picture. The what stands out to me the most, and again, I think this is vital. If they chose to make a business decision to cancel news programming and public affairs programming, I mean, look, that's on them why they did that. My view of the Coretta Scott King funeral is this is a different and a special. Look, a person only dies once. A person of this we don't have that many people of that stature who are still living. And so BET could have said, wait a minute, we have an opportunity to not just educate, but enlighten an entire generation who has no clue or concept of who she was and what she stood for along with others. And I believe that goes beyond showing videos. And if there's a cost involved within 80 million homes, and that's the difference. TV One, I'm on there, but we're in 25 million homes. Black Family Channel, 10 million. They could have offered a far different perspective and a unique perspective. And again, they missed it. They are absent. If you look back 50 years from now, how did America view or cover the funeral of Coretta Scott King? If you say BET, they will not be in the picture because BET.com simply was not enough.
And Roland, I don't accept this idea. You know, when people don't want to do it the right thing, they call it a business decision. You know, some of these stations pimp black people. That is, they'll go in and say, you should cover us and carry us on your channel because black America needs to be here. Then when the time is to provide service, then they say it's a business decision. This is more than a business decision. This is an immoral decision.
I would have to agree with George. I think that in the strongest terms, whatever BET does contribute, they need to be condemned for this. This is not the kind of thing that black America ought to be asleep on. And, you know, the challenge is people feel like BET is omnipresent. And so people don't tend to do what we also don't do regularly, write, call, raise hell, say this is unacceptable. But they do need to hear from their subscribers as well as the people who carry them. They need to hear.
Right.
This is just unacceptable.
I got
to
get to this literally with about a minute, probably a little less to each one of you. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa suggests that he was blindsided by President Bush. His announcement of a thwarted, purported 2002 plot to crash a plane into a city skyscraper here. Many question why the president is even bringing this up now. Villaraigosa later said that, in fact, the White House did call the Capitol, and he was informed via that. But what of this thought, George Curry?
Well, I mean, first of all, just let's go back to this whole thing. This was revealed 2 years ago. And I mean, that's plenty of time for Bush to call the mayor. But basically, you know, this is being used for political purposes because there is no reason that even the details, there's nothing to be gained from disclosing it. If you're so concerned about what Terry is going to do, why disclose this? This has been your excuse for not disclosing it before.
So, Julianne Melvo, do you believe, as George is suggesting, that this is just a way to bolster the idea that, see, this is why we're wiretapping, this is why we have to be in front, because even Los Angeles is being plotted against?
This man is leading by fear and intimidation, and, you know, he's probably got another couple of plots up his sleeves that he's going to throw out, you know, as he attempts to justify his violation of our civil rights. You know, you look at the State of the Union address, and he used the word terrorism 21 times. 21 times, and New Orleans got 5 lines in his 7-page speech. This man is trying to frighten America, but the good news is that when you talk to people in L.A., they're not scared. They're like, whatever.
Roland Martin, we just heard from Senator Bill Frist a moment ago. I asked him about the eavesdropping situation in the White House, and he says he's front and center with the president. It needs to be done to keep us all safe, those in Los Angeles and on throughout this country.
The White House has changed their position. At first, they said they were not going to release information. Now they have. They recognize that they have a political firestorm, and Republicans know that if they do not reveal more information, they're going to have trouble in November. Karl Rove has made it perfectly clear. We're going to run on terrorism. This is a war president. They hope to ride terrorism to a congressional landslide or to keep their seats in November. That's what this is all about, protecting them come November.
All right, guys. In fact, the cloak of terrorism is out there, and we'll see if, in fact, it saves Republicans, as Roland says, when November rolls around. Roland Martin, Julianne Melvo, George Curry, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.